Fawn Diaz moved from Puerto Rico to Georgia as a young girl. Food has always played an important role in her life in both places. On visits to Puerto Rico, where her grandmother was always ready to feed her, when her mother got a second job and Fawn taught herself to feed the family, and later on, when cooking her way through her grandmother's cherished cookbook. Fawn Diaz is a writer and radio producer based in New York. She's a self-taught cook who explores Puerto Rican food, culture, and identity through memoir and multimedia. Her new book is Coconuts and Collards, Recipes and Stories from Puerto Rico to the Deep South. Fawn, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
What are some of your earliest memories you have of food as a kid?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I like to say that I'm a lifetime eater, although I imagine we all are as human beings. Some of my earliest memories of food actually, I think, jump back and forth between Puerto Rico and the South. I write a fair amount in Coconuts and Collards about my early Southern food experiences being, a little lacking. Like a lot of kids, some of my earliest food memories happened in public school or in daycare, and so I was often introduced to these kind of subpar versions of Southern cuisine that I then had to unlearn over time. And similarly, when I would go back to Puerto Rico to visit my family as a kid, which we did fairly often, I would say we went back every year or so, I was really taken with how dynamic and vibrant the flavors of Puerto Rican food were, in contrast and sometimes with some similarities to Southern cuisine.
We hear about fusion cuisines a lot these days. It's been a hip thing for restaurants in a while. When you're writing about Puerto Rican cooking, it's always been a fusion of a lot of different cultures, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it would be very difficult for you to break Puerto Rican food down into any single individual culture. You see elements of indigenous techniques and ingredients such as cassava, African ingredients and cooking techniques such as plantains, sort of mashing things and serving them with flavorful paste in addition to rice, and Spanish cuisine, you know, the first colonial force that was in Puerto Rico, in the use of olive oil, a tremendous use of pork and things of that nature. And then you have American influence, so a lot of mayonnaise, a tendency to rely on canned and frozen vegetables as opposed to fresh. And so, you know, as you look at, you know, if you were to go to a Puerto Rican restaurant today, you would see elements of all four of those influences on the same menu. And in that way, its authenticity is its hybridity.
And you talk about going to Puerto Rico, spending the summer there as a kid sometimes, not a completely positive experience. The mosquitoes, I think, found that they really liked you. There were other downsides, but
they
your
did.
Grandma and the cooking and the food, that really made an impression on you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's interesting about being a Puerto Rican kid growing up in the South is that Puerto Ricans are not immigrants, right? We are born American citizens, but we have all of the experience of other immigrant kids, the language barriers, the different foods, the different cultures. Kids in the South often made fun of my name or made fun of my hair or the color of my skin. And so when I would go back to Puerto Rico, I experienced the counterpoint to that same kind of lack of belonging. The kids in Puerto Rico often made fun of me because I needed air conditioning and I was sort of addicted to television and I didn't eat in the same ways that they did. And so my grandmother became this really important touch point for me to feel included in both spaces. I write in Coconuts and Collards about how my grandmother was born in the Dominican Republic. And after her father was assassinated during the Trujillo era, her family moved to Biloxi, Mississippi, unusually. She happened to have family there. And so my grandmother had that experience of being of one place and growing up in the South. And I think that she was really able to relate to how confusing it was to me and how isolated I felt at times. And so food really became this way for she and I to connect and for me to also start to see the similarities between the culture of my homeland and the culture of my home.
Talking to Fawn Diaz, her new book is Coconuts and Collards, Recipes and Stories from Puerto Rico to the Deep South. I want to get into some of the ingredients you're working with, and one of my favorites, plantains. I was lucky enough to spend some time in Puerto Rico, and it's like the way I think of potatoes. There's like an infinite number of ways to prepare them. Same for plantains in Puerto Rico. So many different ways. Can you talk about the role of the plantain?
Definitely. Well, it's important to point out at the top that plantains actually came to Puerto Rico from Africa, which is interesting because plantains, I think, are thought of as synonymous with the Caribbean, not just with Puerto Rico, with Jamaican food and Haitian food, Dominican food and Cuban food. But they actually were an import from African cultures. And something that I try to do in Coconuts and Collards is to give people a little bit of a guide for how to select plantains based on what they're trying to prepare. So, you know, green plantains are typically prepared in a couple of different ways, as tostones, so they're deep fried and then smashed into discs and refried. So they're kind of like chips that you can, you know, stack things on or just eat with a sauce. Somewhere in between green and dark brown are these bright yellow plantains that are sweet, more likely what people are used to in the States, often called maduros. And those can range in color from sort of light yellow to dark yellow with brown spots, which is like a really sweet spot for that kind of plantain. To then the far end of the spectrum, which is when plantains turn almost black, yeah. Because they become super sweet. And that is, for me, my favorite state of the plantain, because it's just such a vibrant kind of banana flavor, but with this deep earthiness. Those bananas at that, or plantains at that stage, are also really good just sautéed, but can also be mashed and formed into a sweet, savory kind of shepherd's pie with picadillo or ground beef with seasoning in the middle, which is called the pastelón, another recipe that I have in Coconuts and Collards.
My favorite is in that point where, you know, if this thing was a banana, you wouldn't need it. You'd detonate it from a safe distance. That's where I like my plantains to be. My wife likes them greener, and she likes tostones. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the recipes you shared with us. It's a black bean stuffed tostones with avocado sauce. Can you talk us through that recipe?
Sure. So that recipe actually started because I inherited this very specific tool from my grandmother that is a tostones, oftentimes, at least in the Caribbean, are made using an actual press. It's the simplest kind of tool. It's kind of two pieces of wood with a circular section cut out of the middle. And that's where you put the initial deep fried plantain so that it forms into a little, you know, into a circle. My grandmother had this tool that would then take that same tostón and press it so that it becomes a little cup, almost like a tostito scoop, but made of plantain. And I was fascinated by this tool. I have no idea how old it is. It's just a gorgeous little tool, and decided that I wanted to figure out, you know, what would I stuff tostones rellenos with. My grandmother would often stuff them with sardines and capers and lemon, and I wanted to make something vegetarian, because you've been to Puerto Rico, you know that vegetarian food is not super common in Puerto Rico. Vegetables aren't an important part of the cuisine, right? But I really wanted my cookbook to have as much vegetarian cuisine in it as possible, because I'm not vegetarian, but I love vegetables. So I kind of adapted this, you know, kind of traditional stuffed tostones with a very simple vegetarian black bean filling that, you know, you can make with fresh beans, you can make with canned beans, super simple, few ingredients, and then topped with this avocado sauce that is, to me, just one of the most delicious, simplest things you can do with an avocado. And it's super versatile. So ultimately, you take an avocado, put it in a little food processor with a bit of lemon, a tiny bit of water, some salt and pepper, and it makes this awesome vegan sauce that you can, you know, dip your French fries in if you want to, or put on tacos. And so it felt like this really delicious vegetarian appetizer that is at once filling and also, you know, pretty light.
And we can do that without your grandma's special tool. You're right, with a little plate and a coffee cup, was it?
Exactly. Yeah. So you can do that first step with a coffee cup and then press it in a smaller ramekin with the bottom of a muddler, or, you know, the bottom of a spatula if it's fat enough, to sort of form it into this little, what I did, like a little tostito scoop cup.
We've got that recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday, along with a couple others from our guest. Von Diaz is with us. Her new book is Coconuts and Collards, Recipes and Stories from Puerto Rico to the Deep South. You can join in at 800-642-1077. 1, 2, 3, 4. What are your experiences with Puerto Rican food? Has food played a role in your identity and learning about your own culture, whatever that might be? Do you have questions about some of the ingredients that might be used in Puerto Rican cooking? Are you a plantain fan? How do you like your plantains, or you need some advice on how to select and cook and eat them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. It's Food Friday. Von Diaz is with us talking about her new cookbook, Coconuts and Collards, recipes and stories from Puerto Rico to the Deep South. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have experiences with Puerto Rican food, the great variety of Puerto Rican food out there? Have you had something that you could maybe use some advice on how to recreate it yourself? Do you have questions for our guest or experiences and stories to share? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Von, it is spring here in Wisconsin. Fresh Brussels sprouts are not too far off. And one of the recipes you shared with us, we can use there, Brussels sprouts with chorizo sofrito. This one looks great. Talk us through this one a little bit.
Absolutely. So I mentioned earlier that my grandmother spent some of her childhood in Biloxi, Mississippi. It is a total casualidad de la vida, as we say in Spanish. It was by chance that she had family there when she and her family had to leave the Dominican Republic. And I believe, although unfortunately I never had the opportunity to ask her this question because later in life she was struck with pretty severe dementia, she, I think, really developed a love for vegetables while living in the South. And one of her favorite vegetables of all time was Brussels sprouts. As you can imagine, Brussels sprouts don't grow in Puerto Rico. They are not part of the cuisine. They are actually pretty difficult to find. And growing up, my mom had all these really funny stories about how my grandmother would try to prepare frozen Brussels sprouts and would try to get her kids to eat it. And her kids just would not eat them. They thought that they were disgusting. Tata, which is what I call my grandmother, just sort of couldn't figure out the right combination of flavors to make her kids actually like her favorite vegetable. Apparently, she loved them anyway. And so when I was coming up with the recipes for coconuts and collards, I wanted to create a recipe that would pay homage to her and her love of Brussels sprouts, but in a way that I was more familiar with preparing them, having grown up in the South and having worked at Southern restaurants. And so the recipe sort of leans on a pretty classic way of preparing Brussels sprouts. You know, oftentimes you either can roast them whole, you can cut them in half and roast them in the oven, or you can slice them as thin as possible and then pan saute them, which is a great way to prepare them because you get to really keep a real kind of fresh texture to the Brussels sprouts, and they cook in a fraction of the time that it takes to roast them in the oven. And so I take that kind of classic simple technique and pair it with what is a recipe that I came up with, chorizo sofrito. So oftentimes in Puerto Rican food, dishes have sofrito in them. It's the, you know, the spice miracle that makes Puerto Rican food taste like Puerto Rican food. And typically it's onions, some kind of bell pepper, or ajicitos, which is a kind of small bell pepper tasting pepper that's sweet, a recao or culantro, and garlic. And you saute that in olive oil, and that's what creates that amazing kind of Puerto Rican, broader Caribbean flavor. Oftentimes when people make their sofrito, they cut up ham or some kind of smoked pork and add that to give the sofrito an additional flavor boost and add kind of this porky richness to it. And so I took that same kind of concept and added chorizo, which is just a personal favorite of mine. And also, I think, kind of a call out to the Spanish influence that's so abundant in Puerto Rican cuisine. And so the dish is kind of a hybrid of my grandmother's, you know, love for the Brussels sprouts with a very traditional way of preparing any vegetable or meat in using sofrito and then a little bit of chorizo and kind of call back on that Spanish influence and give it a little bit of a spicy kick.
Again, that recipe is at WPR.org/Food Friday. And Von, you just mentioned an ingredient that was new to me in reading your cookbook, culantro, not cilantro. Uh-huh. Culantro.
That's right.
What is that?
So culantro is sometimes called recao, R-E-C-A-O. CAO. It's also sometimes referred to as Oriental cilantro. It's a long leaf. It kind of looks like dandelion greens, but a little bit less spiky. And it tastes almost like cilantro and parsley had a baby. So it has a little bit of more of an earthiness. I think a little bit less of what people describe as a soapiness that comes with cilantro. And it is a bit of a heartier leaf. So it lends itself really well to cooking versus cilantro, which certainly you can cook with cilantro, but a lot of times you want to add it at the end, you know, as a garnish, so you can really taste that bright, flavorful cilantro taste if you happen to be among those who don't have the gene that makes you hate cilantro, right? Because we know that that's actually a scientific fact. Culantro, on the other hand, you can use it as a garnish in that way, but it really lends itself better to slow cooking and to braises. Oftentimes, I'll add whole culantro leaves to my stock, and I find that it really adds this kind of deep earthiness, but with that, the brightness that that cilantro also has.
So Vaughn, growing up and living in the Midwest, I don't know that I've ever knowingly laid eyes on culantro, but you write that if we don't have it accessible to us, maybe just take some cilantro, take some parsley.
Yeah, I have in throughout my recipe testing process for coconuts and collards, I would occasionally also, even though I live in New York, where I can typically find culantro very easily, sometimes I couldn't make it to that grocery store. I just didn't have time. And it's just a 1-to-1 ratio, 1 tablespoon of parsley, 1 tablespoon of cilantro, and you get 2 tablespoons of culantro.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Vaughn Diaz, author of Coconuts and Collards, Recipes and Stories from Puerto Rico to the Deep South. Well, I want to finish up our look at the recipes you shared with us. This makes sense with the dessert you sent along. This is a coconut panna cotta. This uses fresh coconut milk. I'll take a stab at the pronunciation, tembleque. Am I close?
Perfect. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Well, this looks, I'm looking at the picture right now. It looks fantastic. Tell us about it.
So tembleque is a super common dessert in Puerto Rico. I mean, it's so common that it's made in Jell-O instant pudding form. You go to any bakery in Puerto Rico, be it a small bakery or big grocery store, you're going to find tembleque. It's like pudding. It's like Jell-O. And it is just the simplest, loveliest, freshest dessert. At its core, it's coconut milk, some kind of a stiffening agent. People tend to use cornstarch, sugar. And traditionally, it uses this kind of hard-to-find ingredient called agua de azar, or orange flower water. And it's that ingredient. I'm not sure how it made its way to Puerto Rico. I'm sure it came from Spanish influence, but I've never investigated it. Is used fairly commonly in Middle Eastern and Persian cuisine. And it's this really bright, floral, aromatic liquid that gives all of these other ingredients, right, the kind of also very rich coconut flavor and the sweetness of the sugar, it gives it this other dimension. And growing up, I ate it all the time. And then, you know, once you prepare it, you dust it with cinnamon. And it's just the most fascinating combination of flavors. It's sort of nutty and floral and sweet and rich at the same time.
I wanted to talk to you about your process of cooking a little bit. Do you sit down and think consciously, I'm going to take Puerto Rican elements and, say, American Southern elements and consciously merge them together? Or does it just kind of flow from your background and your cooking experience and your work with your grandma and all that kind of more naturally?
You know, I think for me, I feel like both of these cultures' foods live side by side in my mind. And I'm not sure if that's because I just have always been a person that was really interested in food, or I had just kind of the right instructors in both places to really introduce me to the elements of both of these cuisines, so that, you know, it's very likely that if I'm cooking something and I see or smell or imagine an ingredient that I know is commonly used in both places, I'm going to kind of automatically be like, oh, maybe this would also be good. An example of that is a recipe that is in Coconuts and Collards for a fresh corn catfish chowder. And that recipe came entirely from my mind because it has the flavor base of Puerto Rican cuisine, the sofrito that we just talked about, and also a Puerto Rican stock, but with these very Southern ingredients and funky catfish and fresh corn. And it was an experiment at first, and I was like, there's no way this isn't going to work. All of these ingredients love each other in other areas and in other dishes. And sure enough, when I put them together, they worked. So I think for me, my process is about understanding which ingredients and which processes, despite origin, work really well together. And then when I'm excited to eat a particular thing, say, you know, I wake up one day, I'm like, man, I would really love something with coconut milk in it. Then I have this, you know, kind of vocabulary of all the different things that coconut milk tastes great in, and can kind of pick and choose and see what works really well.
And Vaughn, we just have a couple moments left. You have an afterword talking about Puerto Rico right now, today, in the aftermath of last year's hurricane. Your thoughts definitely with the people there.
Absolutely. I try to keep in as much contact with my family and friends that remain on the island. To be honest, most of my family members are here on the U.S. mainland, but I do have a few people that I'm very close to, one of whom I speak about a lot in my book. His name is Berto. He owns a tiny restaurant in Yabucoa, which is the town where Hurricane Maria hit, where the eye hit. And his restaurant was completely torn apart. He's spending a tremendous amount of money just keeping his generator running because electricity is in and out all over the island, and it hasn't been fully revived everywhere, right? So it's very difficult to watch my island, which is also part of the United States, continue to struggle in this way without any kind of resolution.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Vaughn Diaz. We've been talking about her book, Coconuts and Collars, Recipes and Stories from Puerto Rico to the Deep South. Thanks to her for joining us. And remember, you can find three of the recipes she shared with us. They are at wpr.org/foodfriday.